From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden in Washington. On this final night of the convention, we've been hearing a very personal portrait of candidate Mitt Romney. We've heard from members of his Mormon church about his commitment to his community. And we're also hearing from his business partners about his good work with them. At the stage now in Tampa, Florida, is Tom Stemberg. He's the founder of the office supply chain Staples.
Who would make a better president? Someone who knows how to save a dollar on pens and paper, or someone who knows how to waste $535 million on Solyndra? The truth is, Mitt was not a typical investor. He was a true partner. Where some saw an unproven new business, he saw a store that could save people money. He recognized that efficiency creates consumer value. And he never looked at Staples merely as a financial investment. He saw the engine of prosperity it would become. Today, Staples employs nearly 90,000 people. It has over 2,000 stores, over 50 distribution centers, and is part of a competitive industry that helps entrepreneurs and small businesses get started on their own. For me as a founder, it was the realization of a dream. So you can imagine my dismay when I see this White House and their campaign demonizing Mitt Romney, demonizing Bain Capital, and demonizing the private equity industry that has created so many new jobs. Over and over again, fiction, half-truths, and downright lies. Now, you have to ask yourself, why would an administration that can't create any jobs demonize someone who did? I've got a theory. I think when it comes to jobs, new businesses, and economic growth, they just don't get it. You know, they say Mitt Romney is out of touch with ordinary Americans. They just don't get it. The night before we opened the first store, I asked our people to do back-to-back all-nighters. That's when I got a phone call from Mitt. He wanted to come over and talk with the team and spend some time with them. And he told me in very clear terms, Tom, this business is all about the people. But this Obama-Biden campaign, they just don't get it. They will tell you that private equity is focused only on the short term. Tell that to the founders of Bright Horizons Daycare, a company that has transformed corporate daycare. Most people didn't give the business a chance. It went 5 straight years without making a profit. But Mitt and Bain Capital stood by them. Mitt and Bain Capital believed in the vision, and they understood how important it was for women to join the workforce and have on-site daycare for their children. It was an overdue revolution in the American workplace. Today, that company employs over 19,000 people. But President Obama and his friends, they just don't get it. The Obama campaign will tell you that Bain Capital was a form of vampire capitalism. Drain the blood from a company and move on. They just don't get it. You know, where were they when Mitt stayed with Staples for 15 years, long after Bain Capital had sold its stock? Where were they when Bain Capital helped start Steel Dynamics, when most people had given up on the American steel industry? 18 years later, that company employs 6,000 people. But this administration, they just don't get it. You know, they've got a job council that never meets, a Democratic Senate that doesn't act, a president who doesn't believe, and a vice president who just can't stop talking. They just don't get it. And you know, they don't get it because they don't believe in the spirit of the entrepreneur. They don't understand what it means to risk money to create something new. And they don't understand the hard work it takes to get a business off the ground, the sacrifices you make, the little league games you miss. They don't see this as a country of opportunity where someone like myself, the son of immigrants born in Newark, New Jersey, and proud of that, Governor Christie, can live the American dream. Well, let me tell you, my friend Mitt Romney gets it. And I could not be more confident in saying the American people get it. That's why this November, they will elect Mitt Romney as the next president of the United States.
And that was a lively speech by Tom Stenberg, the founder of Staples, who worked with Mitt Romney. He talked about how this Obama administration just doesn't get the value of private equity. And now there's a video playing about Mitt Romney and other colleagues talking about his work. Let's listen in.
In a state of decay, globally non-competitive, going by the wayside, who in the world would take that leap of faith and would invest? I'm Keith Bussey, one of the founders of Steel Dynamics, and today it's chairman and chief executive officer. The question really is, what did Bain do to help us get started? What has that meant to the community? What has it meant to the country or the region? They allowed entrepreneurs to do what they do best, to go out and procreate. And as a result of the success of the first mill, was a second mill and a third mill and a fourth mill and a fifth mill. It allowed spinoff jobs to be created. Without that kind of capital, we wouldn't even exist today. There would not be a Steel Dynamics, of which today, I would tell you, is the fifth largest steelmaker in America. The most profitable steelmaker in America can compete with China or any other nation on earth in the cost of production of flat-rolled steels. So we've grown from an entity that employed about 250 people to an entity that has about 6,500 people working in a climate that wasn't friendly to anyone, number one, and in an industry that most people thought had perished many years earlier. I always think of Mitt and his team as the team that really put us over the top and one of the reasons why we are who we are today in this country. Guy's bright, he's a good businessman, and that's what America needs.
From the Sunshine State.
And that was a video about Steel Dynamics, a company that was helped by Bain Capital, where Mitt Romney worked. And now Jeff Brady, and NPR's Jeff Brady, is down on the floor at the Tampa convention. Hi, Jeff.
Hi there, and I am standing in the Ohio delegation. I'm standing with Dave Johnson. He's from Summitville, Ohio, and he is the CEO of Summitville Tiles. Now, we heard over and over again, they just don't get it. What is it that the Obama administration people don't get?
I don't think they fully appreciate what it's like to run a company. In the case of my business, it's a 100-year-old family business. We are fighting in a global environment. In recent years, I've had to close two factories. I've had to shut down 16 distribution centers. I've had to lay off 450 people, and it was painful. We did it in order to save our company. And I look at the business climate under the Obama administration, where the effort seems to be more redistribute the wealth rather than create new wealth. He scares me in a second term, especially.
So you're a businessman. Why do you want other people? Why do you want other voters to elect a businessman as president?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
Why do you want other voters to elect a businessman as president? What about your experience as a businessman leads you to want to encourage other people to vote for Mitt Romney?
I'm just concerned about the economy, and I think we need a leader in this country who's had experience in building companies and employing, in this case, thousands of people. I think we'd have a better understanding of what it takes to create jobs and sustain jobs in this country.
Ohio is going to be a key state in this election. Is this a ticket, the Romney-Ryan ticket, that can help Ohio swing?
I believe it will be. I've never seen more enthusiasm than I have in this campaign, and we've got victory centers even in my small little county where we've already made 20,000 calls in our county, and we're going door to door, a real grassroots campaign. I feel really good about it.
So you see a lot of focus from the Romney campaign on Ohio.
Oh, no question about it. Ohio will be a critical state in this election.
All right, that's Dave Johnson from Summitville, Ohio, CEO of Summitville Tiles. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Back to you in the...
Well, Jeff, actually, can I ask you, before we came to you there, I understand there's another video played down there where they reprised President Obama's famous... quote now about how you didn't build that. Tell us about that and how that went over.
Well, that is, that is a line that gets applause every single time we hear it here in the convention hall. And I have to say, we have heard it over and over and over again. I almost think it's come to mean more than just the words there, but people see it as almost like a line that says it's sort of become a referendum on this president that it just... Now it's sort of just equal to elect somebody else.
And there were some boos in the crowd?
I didn't hear the boos from where I was standing here in the Ohio delegation.
Okay. And we should just mention that President Obama says he was taken out of context there, talking about how businesses don't build the infrastructure that they use. Jeff Brady, thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Jennifer.
I'm here with Matt Continenti of the Washington Free Beacon, and also we have NPR's Washington editor Ron Elving and E.J. Dion of the Washington Post and Brookings Institution down in Tampa. We're getting a much broader picture of Mitt Romney tonight. Ron Elving, some of the stories from his fellow Mormons were very touching and moving.
Yes, we have seen a progression of testimonials of an emotional kind and also of a very hard-headed business-like mind, and that is the combination, if you will, the contradictory presentation that we talked about earlier, the contradictory demands on the candidate. But I thought probably the high point thus far was Pam Finlayson, who had been one of the members of Mitt's church back in Massachusetts years ago, and her daughter, and all of the compassionate things that the Romney family had done for her daughter, who did reach adulthood but eventually did die of an illness from her childhood. There was also another couple from that same part of the world, from New Hampshire, who had met Mitt Romney when he was in Massachusetts. Those were very moving stories, and they showed us a compassionate Mitt Romney of whom we have not seen or heard nearly as much as we have about the business like Mitt Romney.
All right, and actually we are going to go back to the podium now. We will come and chat with you again later, but we're hearing now from Massachusetts Lieutenant Governor Carrie Healey. She was Mitt Romney's Lieutenant Governor, and she's currently an advisor to his campaign.
How did he fix our state? Well, he quickly assembled a cabinet of the best and the brightest, drawing on both parties, Republicans and Democrats, half women, half men, to give him the full spectrum of ideas and advice. He respected different opinions. He valued open debate. And when it was all said and done, Mitt Romney knew how to make a decision. Governor Romney did what many thought was impossible. He turned around a $3 billion budget gap and created a $2 billion rainy day fund. He even worked to streamline government, but at the same time made certain to safeguard protections for the elderly, children, and the homeless. In education, Governor Romney gave parents more choices. insisted on tough standards for both teachers and students, and Massachusetts schools became the best in the nation. We cleared out regulations on small businesses, and we cut taxes 19 times. And as a result, unemployment dropped to only 4.7%. And unlike President Obama, Governor Romney's economic policies were rewarded with a credit upgrade. Now, those are the facts and figures, but when people find out that I served as Mitt Romney's lieutenant governor, they always ask me the same question. What's he like? First and foremost, Mitt Romney is a good and honorable man, committed to public service and his country. On the morning he took the oath of office, his first act was to focus public attention on those in need. We serve breakfast to homeless veterans, encouraging volunteerism and acknowledging the special debt we owe to those who sacrifice for our country. You know, you may not know this, but Mitt Romney never took a salary as governor. But he worked harder than anyone I know. Every morning, very early before the rest of us arrived, Mitt would meet with his economic secretary. They worked tirelessly because for Mitt, creating jobs was his top priority. Mitt was always a hands-on leader. When one of Boston's tunnels collapsed, tragically killing a passenger in her car, Mitt didn't blame others. He dove in and fixed the problem. Mitt immersed himself in the engineering challenges, personally oversaw safety inspections, abolished cronyism and corruption, and restored public confidence. That's the Mitt Romney I know, and he is ready to bring that same work ethic, vision, and integrity to the White House.
And we've been listening to former Massachusetts Lieutenant Governor Carrie Healey talking about her time working with Mitt Romney. We are working up to the big speech from the candidate himself, Mitt Romney, later tonight. He'll be introduced by Florida Senator Marco Rubio. You're listening to special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. This is NPR News.
Support for NPR's election coverage comes from CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. From Nissan, featuring the redesigned Nissan Altima with 38 miles per gallon highway. Nissan, innovation that excites. And from the Principal Financial Group, managing investments and working to help build dreams for more than 130 years. The Principal at dreamagain.com. This is NPR.
Thank you.
From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden. This last night of the convention is all about the candidate. We've been listening to a portrait of Mitt Romney emerge. The story Republicans are telling is of a man of privilege, but also empathy. We've heard stories from his friends, fellow church members, business partners. It's all building to the moment when Mitt Romney takes the stage and tells us his own story. Now we're going to go back to the floor of the convention in Tampa, where NPR's Brian Naylor is with the Massachusetts delegation. Hey, Brian.
Hi, Jennifer. Yeah, we've been hearing part of the story of Mitt Romney, of course, is his term as governor of Massachusetts. And so I thought we'd talk a little bit about that record and get some folks to talk about the Romney record in Massachusetts. I'm with Brock Cordiero, who is a state committeeman from Dartmouth, Massachusetts. And tell me a little bit about what Mitt Romney did as governor in Massachusetts.
Mitt Romney streamlined our state government. He brought efficiencies to the government. Just looking at closing a several billion dollar budget deficit, and when he entered the office and left it with a couple of billion dollar budget surplus. He cut the size of government, and he did that, and he balanced the budget without raising taxes. He reformed our educational program. He brought his business acumen and leadership skills to the corner office in Beacon Hill, and hopefully he'll bring it to the Oval Office. His record in Massachusetts was stellar, with fiscal responsibility and a government that will provide the services that people need, but in a way that was fiscally responsible, and it's just the right medicine for Massachusetts then and what we need for America now.
Well, speaking of medicine, of course, the thing that I guess that he's most known for as Massachusetts governor is what's become to be known as Romney Care, sort of a state health insurance program upon which what we know as Obamacare has been and modeled. How is the Massachusetts health care plan different from what has been passed by this administration?
I think it's substantially different. The commonalities, are superficial. One of the biggest differences is the size and scope of the bureaucracy that's created under Obamacare that was not created under Romney Care. Romney Care was wildly popular when it was instituted. It has grown and changed since then. It's probably better called Patrick Care or Deval Care now, with the Democratic legislature further morphing the program. But I know Mitt was proud of what he did. He dared to tackle the tough issue, and he tried to bring market-based efficiencies and reforms, choice of personal choice in terms of what plans you can purchase. And bring those market-based forces and link the individual to their health care program and not remove the individual's choice, which is at the core of Obamacare.
So I was going to say, though, it sounds very much like what Obamacare is. Providing markets, providing people an opportunity to buy private health insurance is something that he did in Massachusetts possible to carry out on a national scale.
Well, Mitt Romney has said many times that he doesn't believe in a one-size-fits-all healthcare system. What works in Massachusetts doesn't necessarily work in the other 49 states. Mitt's always maintained that each state should have the ability to design their own programs, let them be the laboratories of their own ideas. They know what's best for the people of each individual state know what is best for themselves and their choices in healthcare, and not a one-size-fits-all federal option. There are commonalities. I think most of them are superficial, but the difference is this was a plan designed of, by, and for the residents of the Bay State, not all the citizens of the United States.
So finally, Massachusetts is a very blue state. I know Republicans in the state are very enthusiastic about Mitt Romney, but it's not likely that he's going to be able to carry the state. Do you think his influence, though, the adjacency to New Hampshire might help him there?
Well, absolutely. I think he will do well in New Hampshire because of the residents of New Hampshire knowing Mitt Romney's record in Massachusetts. They saw him on our local news. They don't have the direct experience, but they're our cousins next door, and we are a very blue state at times. However, Mitt Romney had a record of working across the aisle, working with the Democrats to pass his agenda. He can build those bridges necessary, both on Beacon Hill and if he's elected, he'll do it on Capitol Hill. So If anything, the argument of Mitt Romney coming from Massachusetts, to me, is a strength he will bring to Washington, D.C.
Right. Brock Cordiero from Dartmouth, Massachusetts. Thanks very much for speaking with us. Jennifer, back up to you.
Thank you, Brian. We're going to go to the podium now. Speaking is Jane Edmonds. She's the former Massachusetts Secretary of Workforce Development, a self-described liberal Democrat and African-American. Here's Jane Edmonds.
He is unquestionably an amazing steward and leader, a servant leader, and someone whom I respect very much. That's the kind of leadership that has always inspired me, unselfish leadership. The late Stephen Covey writes about two kinds of people. One type is all about themselves and their success, and the other type works as hard as they can and certainly succeeds, but their success is motivated by doing good for others. That's how I see Governor Romney. He is authentic. He is open to good ideas wherever they come from. It doesn't matter if they're from a liberal Democrat like me. He'll listen, and he's inclusive. As a great leader, he brought out the best in me. And I know, as president, he will bring out the best in our country.
And that was Jane Edmonds, the former Massachusetts Secretary of Workforce Development, a liberal Democrat lauding her former Republican boss. Joining us now, we have Ron Elving, E.J. Dionne of the Washington Post, and Matt Continetti of the Washington Free Beacon. We've been hearing a broader portrait of Mitt Romney tonight, some very personal stories from friends and fellow church members of his. How are they doing in painting a more personal image of him?
Well, Jane Edmonds, I thought, did very well, and she used a word that I don't think I had ever heard associated with Mitt Romney before. She called him authentic, and so that is a first, and coming from a liberal Democrat
there
such as
go.
Herself, that
it's
must
settled.
Count for something. You know, I think that there is a real contrast between the personal stories we heard earlier in the evening from the Oporowskis, who lost a son, and from Pam Finlayson, who lost a daughter, versus the wealthy CEOs, who we heard kind of in the middle of the evening, Bob White and Tom Stenberg, who kind of gave paeans to the free enterprise system. And Stenberg had a great phrase. He said, you know, he learned from Mitt that, quote, efficiency creates consumer value, end quote. And I'm sorry, I just don't think that's a slogan you write to the White House. I think Romney. I have to take issue with the conventional organizers. I would have flipped that. I would have put the highly paid CEOs at the beginning, and I would have really focused attention on the stories of the Oporowskis and Pam Finlayson, which I thought were very moving.
Well, E.J. Dionne, it's certainly an eclectic picture. He's an eclectic man.
I thought that the slogan, efficiency creates consumer value, would warm Matt's capitalist heart. But I totally agree with him that the CEOs sounded like CEOs, and there was a harshness to their tone, whereas the personal witnesses were genuinely moving. I mean, I'm as skeptical as they come about how these conventions try to manipulate us all. But some of these stories, I like Ron earlier, I was really moved by the Pam Finlayson story. I mean, he sounds like a real guy. And it makes you think, ask the question, why did Romney wait so late to reintroduce these aspects of himself? Why didn't he run any positive advertising early on, put any of these people on the air in short commercials? I think he opened up, however, on the negative side for him tonight. I don't think he wants to run on that Massachusetts record. I haven't looked at my email in a moment, but I know on the Twitters they're already putting out, noting that Massachusetts was 47th in job creation under Romney, that number that the Obama people are going to sear in people's heads. I think we're going to have another look at the economy. But the personal stories tonight were really powerful, there's no question.
Well, and Ron Elving, it's striking because we've heard so little about both his time as governor in Massachusetts and his role in the Mormon Church until now.
That's right, and these are two aspects of his record that have been problematic. for him going through the Republican primaries. People said you can't get the nomination if you're a Mormon. People said you can't get the nomination if you were governor of Massachusetts. It's just too liberal a state. And he didn't bring Jane Edmonds, the liberal Democrat who was just singing his praises and talking about his authenticity a moment ago, out to New Hampshire, that I recall, out to the Iowa caucuses, or perhaps to any of the primaries down south. We didn't see her there making the case that she was just making for him. So this is a new part of the Romney story. This is that transition we talked about from the primaries to the fall campaign to the man we might see as president if he does in fact get elected. But can I just say, I never expected to hear Taylor Hicks from American Idol or anyone else ever sing the Doobie Brothers hit from the mid-70s, taking it to the streets at the Republican National Convention. This is turning my head around.
A night of surprises all around. Matt Continenti, we have heard very touching stories of Mitt Romney's church life. Last night we had the governor, or former governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee, saying, look, I care less where Mitt Romney takes his family to church. I only care about where he takes his country. Do you think this convention has served to win over evangelicals?
I think it's playing a part. Paul Ryan also had another line saying, coming from a conservative Catholic perspective, I think people who go to church regularly are going to turn out for Mitt Romney. I really do. I would say this, though. We're hearing a lot about Romney's biography. I think there's a danger in relying too heavily on your biography. You have to make it about ideas like Paul Ryan did last night and has done for the past month.
All right. I believe we are now going to hear from a group of Olympians. Mitt Romney, of course, is known for his work as the chief executive at the Salt Lake City Olympic Games, and a number
Thank
of athletes
you.
Have come to talk about him.
I have had the good fortune, the amazing blessing, to represent this great country as a proud member of Team USA at the last five Olympic Games in double strap skeet shooting competitions.
And this is Kim Rhodes, a skeet shooter with five Olympic medals.
In the summer of 1996, and I just returned from the Olympics in London a few weeks ago with another gold medal. This was one of a record-setting 104 medals won by Team USA, including 58 by women, which is the most ever. I think it's safe to say we showed the world that women of America are a force to be reckoned with. I am honored to share the stage tonight with a handful of Olympic champions. Allow me to introduce them to you. Dan Jansen, an American favorite throughout four Olympiads and gold medalist. Andy Gable, a four-time short track speed skating Olympian and a silver medal winner. Rowdy Gaines, an Olympic Hall of Famer and three-time Olympic gold medal winner. Leanne Parsley, a silver medalist in the women's skeleton in 2002. Noelle Pikus Pace, the 2007 skeleton world champion and 2010 Olympian. Bill Schiffenauer, a three-time Olympic and Olympic bobsled silver medalist in 2002. Jimmy Shea, the only third-generation Olympian winning the gold medal in skeleton in 2002. Jean Rassane Pram, a two-time World Cup champion. the time when I walked into the Olympic Games in Atlanta as a wide-eyed 16-year-old to the moment a few weeks ago when I heard our national anthem played in London as a seasoned veteran, I've seen our country both prosper and more recently falter. Not unlike my athletic career, there were many times when things were going very well and times when they were not. It was in those times when things were difficult that I learned to rely on strong leadership to get me, as they would say in my world, back on target. The strong leadership of a more experienced teammate, of my coaches, and of course, most importantly, the strong leadership of my mom and dad. I came here tonight because I believe that today our country is off target. We need the leadership of Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan to turn our country around so that millions of Americans who have taken aim at their own dreams, whatever they may be, have the opportunity for those dreams to come true, just like our Olympic dreams did. We need strong leadership, we need new leadership, and we need it now.
And this is Kim Rhode, Olympian skeet shooter, talking about Mitt Romney, who, of course, headed the Salt Lake City Olympic
Games. We are here on stage because we know Americans need the leadership of Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Thank you all so much and good night.
All right, now Mike Arruzione, who is the captain of the 1980 Winter Olympics ice hockey team.
And I am honored to have this opportunity tonight to talk with you about the global significance of the Olympic movement, its ideals, and its meaning, and how it was rescued by Mitt Romney. It has been over 10 years, so many of you may have forgotten, but in 2002, due to bribery scandals and mismanagement, the Olympics, not just those games, but the Olympics as an institution, were threatened. Thankfully, Mitt Romney was there to salvage a desperate situation. Mitt's leadership not only turned around those games by solving the operational and financial problems, but he did something deeper. He drew a line in the sand and said that the 2002 Games would have the highest standards of ethics and integrity. He put Olympians, the athletes, and the ideals of the Olympics back at the center of the Games. He focused on restoring the Olympics to the top pedestal of sports, and he preserved the opportunity and idealism of the Olympics for future generations. I was fortunate to compete in the Olympics as captain of the 1980 U.S. Miracle on Ice hockey team.
Mike Arruzione, who headed that team, the famous Miracle on Ice. And more coming up. This is the 2012 Republican National Convention from NPR News. Thank you. From NPR News, this is special coverage of the 2012 Republican National Convention. I'm Jennifer Ludden, and we're going back to the podium in Tampa now, where we have a group of Olympians, Michael Arruzioni of the 1980 Winter Olympics ice hockey team, talking about Mitt Romney, who, of course, headed the 2002 Salt Lake City Olympic Games.
Now, those are his three reasons.
And now, actually, now we have Derek Parra, who's at the mic.
Champion. But somehow, from inside a roller rink as a teenager, a dream grew within my heart that someday, maybe, I could represent my country at the Olympic Games. And I chased that dream for over 20 years. And eventually, it led me to Salt Lake City. With great effort and the help of some amazing people along the way, I have become one of the top speed skaters in the world. And the finish line was in sight. But as the Olympics appeared on the horizon, that dream was almost derailed. The Olympics were mired in scandal and budget deficit, and even worse, the national tragedy of September 11th that shook our entire nation to its very core. It was a time of uncertainty, but in my Olympic world, Mitt Romney was at the helm. His vision and commitment got the games back on track and gave me the opportunity to realize my athletic dream. Not only did Mitt facilitate my dream in 2002, he facilitated the dreams of all athletes from around the world. At that time, I had only met Mitt briefly, but after the Olympics, I got to know him, and for a period of time, I lived with him and his family. I know Mitt, and I know him well. I know him as a businessman, as a leader. I know him as a father, and as a very, very busy grandfather. And I'm proud to say that I know him as a friend. Now, you might think my greatest Olympic moment came when I stood on the podium for the first time with a gold medal wrapped around my neck. But you'd be wrong. In fact, my most powerful Olympic memory came before the Olympics even started. It's a story I've heard Mitt reference a number of times on the campaign trail, so I'd like to share with you firsthand what it was like for me. February 8th, 2002 was a cold but clear night in Salt Lake City. It was the night of the opening ceremonies. I was competing the very next morning, so I was planning not to attend. But that all changed the second I got the call from the U.S. Olympic Committee, just hours before the ceremony, asking me if I would be able to be one of the eight athletes selected to carry the World Trade Center flag into the opening ceremonies. I was floored. Instantly, I knew it was something I had to do. Something I wanted to do. It was an honor beyond anything I could have ever imagined. And while it's now just over 10 years later, at that time, our country was still reeling from the wounds, the trauma, and the pain of September 11th. As the opening ceremonies got underway, the other flag-bearing athletes and I gathered backstage. We were standing with the Port Authority officers, whose job it was to oversee the flag. They began telling us how proud they were of us, that the families of the victims were proud of us, that all the people who lost their lives were proud of us. When it came time to begin the procession, I touched the flag for the first time, and I remember a physical sensation unlike anything I had ever experienced. If it's possible to feel your soul being touched, then that's what I felt. As we carried the flag out before a capacity crowd and a worldwide television audience, the silence was deafening. That flag, which had flown over so much pain and loss, still stood for life, love, and the hope of a nation. There are few times in any life when the emotion of a moment is all that exists. That night, time stood still. As our national anthem rang out like never before, I stood there holding that flag, the symbol of everything our country had ever been through, with tears streaming down my face. That moment came under the leadership of Mitt Romney. And it not only inspired me, but it inspired all of Team USA. We went on to win a record number of medals. Today, our country is struggling, but the right leaders can inspire us to push on, overcome seemingly insurmountable challenges, and to accomplish great things. Mitt Romney is that kind of leader. Thank you, and God bless.
And that was Derek Parra. He's the first Mexican-American to compete and medal in the Olympic Winter Games, talking about Mitt Romney's role in the Salt Lake City Olympic Games in 2002. He was one of a group of Olympians up there on the stage to support Mitt Romney. Jeff Brady is on the floor of the Convention Center there in Tampa. Hi, Jeff.
Hello, and I'm with the Utah delegation, and we just finished a little chat, or they just finished a chat of USA here. I'm standing with Don Pei. He's from Bountiful, Utah, that's south of Salt Lake City. He's a businessman, and back in 1999, he was closely watching the Utah State Legislature. Tell me what you saw.
Well, I grew up in a very blue-collar family, construction workers. No one had ever attended college. I'd earned a chemical engineering degree and an MBA at BYU, Mitt's alma mater. So the Olympics were under crisis, huge problems. And when Mitt came in from Boston, a lot of us kind of like, oh, yeah, well, here's this Harvard blue blood, you know, coming in. And I remember the first time he walked in a meeting with a bunch of businessmen and told us he'd fix it. And then I just watched him for 4 years take everything completely apart, put in a plan, put in a budget, inspire 25,000 volunteers under the mantra of light the fire within. And he pulled off what Dick Ebersol of NBC Sports said was one of the best Olympics ever. What people also may not remember is 6 months before the Olympics, we had 9/11. And a lot of people just said, let's just walk away from our $300 or $400 million investment. We can't do it. Terrorists, too big of a threat. And Mitt pulled everyone together once again with his leadership, doubled down, said, we can do this. And once again, so... That's why the people of Utah who watched Mitt come in and do the impossible on a very big national, international stage, we realized the guy's superhuman. He's a super leader. You know, he's the Michael Jordan of business and politics. He does stuff most people can't do. And that's why the people of Utah are just so excited to see him be on the national stage. We need a leader to fix America.
That's Don Pei. He's a businessman in Bountiful, Utah. And clearly a Mitt Romney supporter down here in the Utah delegation, Jennifer.
Jeff Brady, thank you so much. E.J. Dion, Mitt Romney, a superhuman, he was called there, the Michael Jordan of business and politics. Is this going to improve his standing with the people he needs to win the election?
I think it's always a mistake for a politician to claim to be superhuman.
He didn't claim. It was a lovely man in Utah.
Yes, exactly. To claim that on behalf of any politician. To the extent that people are watching some of this stuff, I think some minds might have been changed by some of these stories. But I'm not sure this audience is big enough. I think it's going to fall to Romney himself. And I think that the speech we hear tonight is going to be very different from the kinds of really harsh and in some ways, as in the welfare ad, untrue advertisements we're seeing on television, because Romney's image problems, they're trying to talk about that a little, trying to fix that a little with some of the talk about Bain Capital, for example, but these image problems have stuck deeply. And one of the reasons they've stuck is because we forget that he came under enormous fire from his own opponents in the Republican primaries. And if you look at the polling, his personal image really began to suffer in that period. And obviously the primary opponents can't be accused of having a partisan bias against him. And then the Obama campaign picked right up from there and have run a series of very tough ads against him for a couple of months. So the referendum on Obama and his economy that Romney is going to call for tonight is only possible if he can start shaking off some of this, some of that negative image. Of some of this stuff will help a little, but he's got to do it himself.
Matt Continenti, he has been in politics for a number of years. How much can you change your image in one night? And I'm looking, you know, CNN hasn't been carrying a lot of these moving stories we've been hearing.
No, and that's a shame. I mean, when you talk about I think character trumps, technocratic expertise, like you see in the Olympics. It's the stories of Mitt Romney's personal character that I think could sway some minds. But again, like I was saying earlier, there's a real danger in relying too heavily on what has happened in your past. Candidates who have done that, like John Kerry, John McCain, they end up losing. Mitt Romney needs to make this a speech. Yeah, introduce yourself, but then talk about what you're going to do in the next 4 years. I think that's how you win.
All right, and we are about to go to a video of Mitt Romney. There's a lot of stagecraft going on in Tampa tonight, a lot of personal stories. We've got some bands playing. We've had videos of from Mitt Romney's colleagues talking about his time in business and their good memories of him. We're getting a far broader image of the candidate tonight. We've heard from fellow Mormon church members about the hours he spent helping those in need, and we've heard from his business colleagues. Let's go down and listen in now as the Tamper prepares to play a video on Mitt Romney.
I'm a guy who believes in the vision of the founding fathers. I believe this is the land of opportunity. I believe that if we restore the principle of opportunity and hope and give everyone a fair chance, you're going to see this country come roaring back.
Person will operate, look at how they've lived their life.
They were asking me about what's going on with, you know, with what happened with the scandal and what my opinion is of if we can pull this thing off. And I said, yeah, it's gonna be just fine. And they said, how do you know? And I said, because I just met Mitt Romney.
People were afraid. People were thinking that something terrible could happen. After 9/11, the way we looked at these events changed drastically. More so than any Olympic Games, the world was really watching this one. How was the United States going to respond? Could they put on an Olympic Games?
It was worse than I'd expected. I thought the Salt Lake turnaround was just a public relations turnaround. Instead, it turned out to be a financial turnaround and a governmental turnaround.
He was not a figurehead. He was not only running this show, but he was out there speaking to the people and showing them through his words, through his actions, what the Olympics could mean to the United States.
When I was diagnosed with multiple sclerosis, both of us just dissolved in tears.
Probably the toughest time of my life was standing there with Ann as we hugged each other and the diagnosis came.
I was very, very ill. I don't know if people knew how sick I was. I was frightened, Mitt was frightened, but I needed him desperately.
Look, I'm happy in life as long as I've got my soulmate with me.
Mitt decided that he was going to honor heroes throughout the country and that the torch relay was going to be all about heroes. And Mitt chose me as his hero. My life was in jeopardy, and I was like as vulnerable as a person could be. And I trust Mitt. I trust him with my life.
She's gorgeous. Absolutely beautiful. You know, I can't explain love. I don't know why it happens. I don't know why it endures the way it does. At the very beginning, I sat with her, chatted with her, put my arm around her, and, you know, something changed.
My 16th birthday party was when Mitt and I really became sort of an item. Mitt helped plan it, and it was just sort of the beginning of our romance. 1968, he flew into the Detroit airport right before Christmas. Of course, his mother is like got her arms open and he runs right by her and grabs me.
On the car ride home from the airport, I turned to Ann and said, I feel like I've never been away. And she said, I feel the same way.
So by the time we got home, we get out of the car and we tell everybody, well, we're getting married, like, next week. We compromised and waited until March 21st.
Yes, sweet baby.
Yes, sweet baby. I could do okay when I hit the two.
My brother and I, Matt, fought a lot.
Three, not bad. Four, it got to be a little much.
Hello, man!
Oh, my gosh. Very rambunctious.
And then with the fifth one, and Craig was my most active child. He was a handful.
Craigie! Hi! Oh, Craig, don't spoil me!
I remember my mom was always begging for us to be quiet. Just please, can I have quiet in this house?
We could bend a lot of rules and get in a lot of trouble. We could never, never say anything bad about my mom.
I traveled a good deal. My early career, I would call Ann and I could hear the boys in the background and she might be a little exasperated. And I said, Ann, don't forget, what you're doing is more important than what I'm doing.
I hate to say it, but often I had more than five sons. I had six sons.
How you doing, Uncle Snorts?
He was really playful.
You know,
Mitt would walk in the door after work, leave the briefcase at the door. That was it. Never thought about work again until we left in the morning.
We just felt like we were the most important thing in his life.
I went to Mom if I ever needed money, because he never went to Dad. He was way too cheap.
My dad didn't have the right bulb, so he replaced it just with whatever bulb he had. The problem is it sticks out way too far and blinds you as you cook. So he just solved that with some tin foil and duct tape.
I've been poor. I've worked from the time I was 12. I know what poverty is. I've been up through it.
For Mitt, I think he idealized his father. He really was his hero.
In the summer, my dad used to pack up our family and take us to the great national parks. It was during those trips that I fell in love with America. Dad was born in Mexico. His parents and grandparents had moved to Mexico. They were refugees from a revolution. I remember Ann asking my dad, what was the most meaningful accomplishment of your life? And without hesitation, he said, the greatest accomplishment of my life is having raised you four kids. Like me, he fell in love young. Family for my mom and dad was everything. My dad worked for his dad. He was a drywall guy. Back then, they called it lath and plaster. He could put nails in his mouth and spit them out pointy and forward. I grew up watching my dad lead.
Look, I'm in public life today because I'm concerned about America. I'm concerned about what's happening to America.
If he felt some way about a particular issue, there was no question in your mind about how he felt. Friends called him the brick because he was immovable. He let me tag along in some very unusual settings.
All right, and we're going to bow out of Tampa there. We've been watching charming home videos of Mitt Romney playing with his sons rolling on the floor. It's all part of an effort to paint a personal portrait of the Republican presidential candidate. And he will speak in the next hour from special coverage from NPR News.